Now that we know a little bit more about how the economy can affect one person, how about groups or communities? Ralph Catalano studies just that. He's a professor at the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. Professor, welcome.
Thank you, Farai.
So you study the way that the economy can affect public health. Just briefly, what trends do we tend to see when the economy is booming?
Well, the research on the economy and health falls into two packages. One has to do with individual risk factors, that is, whether losing a job or gaining a job changes the probabilities of someone being ill. And then there's a group of research that looks at populations as a whole, particularly people who are not losing or gaining jobs but who are embedded in communities where there is much job loss or job gain. If you look at the first package, that is the individual level risk factors, you'll discover that in terms of rapid economic growth, there are costs to that. Accidents, for example, go up. Individuals are more likely to be involved in accidents, as you might expect. And, of course, in the community, there are more. It's also the case that when the economy grows quickly, there are people who are typically moving into a community with a rapidly growing economic base, and you have all the problems of populations that are migrant and moving. On the other hand, when the economy is contracting, you have the opposite effects. You have people wanting to leave, and oftentimes it's the healthy people who leave, and who people who are left behind may have problems that keep them from being competitive elsewhere.
So how are governments in general, from what we know from the past, responsive to seeing these changes in how people act and the problems people have?
Well, of course, governments try to have programs that start more or less automatically when the economy starts changing, particularly in downward. So we have extensions of unemployment compensation systems. We have extensions of disability systems. We have attempts to shift investment to try to stimulate regions where it looks like the economy is starting to contract. The current problem is, as with all recessions, it looks like it's starting to contract almost everywhere. So finding resources to help those places which are contracting worse means you're taking resources from places where the economy is also contracting. So it does create a public policy problem, but you do see the response that we are currently having, which is that the government will apparently borrow considerable amounts of money and try to stimulate the economy and to try to soften this contraction across the country so that the population does not become more desperate than it is or needs to be.
This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're back talking about how the economy affects public health with Ralph Catalano. He's a professor at the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. So, Professor, I'm going to jump right back into it. You have also studied how unemployment affects something called civil commitment. I don't know what that means. Tell me what it does mean and how it affects us.
Sure. Civil commitment is the coercing of individuals into mental health treatment because they've been found to be either a danger to themselves or to others or gravely disabled. So if you find someone who's functioning so badly in the community that if you leave them alone, they're likely to become dangerously ill or perhaps do violence to themselves or others, we in the United States and elsewhere coerce them into treatment. And coercing someone into treatment requires the finding that their functioning level, that is, that their behavior is such that if they continue it, they will be in dire straits. That is, that they're not acting the way that you'd expect others to respond to things in the environment. When the economy gets worse, it turns out that more of these civil commitments are done. More people are coerced into treatment than is otherwise the case. But perhaps more importantly, it's also the case that when the economy is worse, the level of functioning of these people who are coerced into treatment is actually better. That is, it appears that people who would function and be left alone pretty much when the economy is going well actually get coerced into treatment when the economy is worse.
Let me get this right. So people
yes.
who, you know, if we're talking, and I'm just going to use the vernacular, about people who are acting off or acting crazy, those are the kind of popular terms for it.
Mm-hmm.
The commitment of people who are acting off or seem off goes up, but those people are actually acting out less than they would be, you know, for the similar group of people committed in different times.
That's right. And this finding is consistent with a long tradition and research looking at what's called the frustration aggression theory, which is that when the economy contracts, people become frustrated. And among the ways that people deal with frustration is that they aggress against others. There are the famous studies of the relationship between the price of cotton and the lynching of African Americans in the South, for example, at the turn of the century. When the price of cotton fell, there was more violence toward African Americans and more lynching. In a contemporary world, thank goodness we don't lynch people any longer, but it's still the case, for example, that African American males are coerced into treatment much more frequently when the economy contracts, and they actually are better functioning males, suggesting that our tolerance for this group of persons actually goes down, and we aggress against them in more societally acceptable ways, which is to report them to the police.
So would it be a situation, for example, where people are frayed by what ordinarily might be normal things? Like one complaint that neighbors commonly have about each other is noise complaints. If someone has a party and it gets loud, you might have something like a noise complaint, or people also, you know, complain about, you know, for example, in New York City, people have written about if neighbors gather at a street corner to talk, for some groups of neighbors, that's just where you talk. You run into each other, you talk on the street corner. Other people find that threatening. What are we really talking about in terms of the behaviors that would trigger this kind of misunderstanding or hostility?
Well, the research focuses on two groups specifically, those people who are thought to be threats to others. That is, you have to exhibit some behavior which suggests that if you're left untreated, you'll actually do violence to someone else. So it's not stopping on the street corner to discuss things. It's threatening other people. And the second group are those people who are what we call gravely disabled. That is, that they're not just sort of mumbling. They're actually lying in the street or not able to get up and walk around. Now, when the economy is good, it turns out that one has to be fairly disabled or quite threatening before he or she gets coerced into treatment. When the economy gets worse, it appears that people who are less threatening and would not be perceived as being a threat to someone's well-being or to their own well-being are perceived as a threat. So now, whether that's the same kind of intolerance that would account for some people not liking folks having conversations on the street or not, I'm not sure. I suspect it has more to do with the biological expression of frustration, because this work also is noted in other species that if you frustrate them, they in fact become more aggressive.
So in hard times, we're talking about people taking disagreements, according to this study, to the level where they may have other people committed against their will. And you talk about the racial implications of that. What does that say about what might pan out for our society if we're not careful, if there is this, if not racially targeted, at least racially trackable trend?
Well, the ordinary concern we have about our intolerance of others for reasons that have little to do with their behavior but rather has to do with their race or religion or gender, that concern should be greater when the economy contracts because history suggests we will be less tolerant. Now, are we making improvements over time? Sociologists tell us yes, that we're less likely to do that now than we were earlier, but we still do it. And so I think it's a good public health intervention to remind everyone that when the economy gets bad and we start to feel frustration and anger, that we have to be careful how we treat ourselves. That is, what do we do to make ourselves feel better? How do we cope with that? As your earlier guest alluded to, there's an increase in familial violence during these kinds of periods. There's among job losers in particular, there's an increase in violence and there's an increase of alcohol use. So the general sort of set of behaviors that go with coping with anxiety and frustration and, if you will, stress become more problematic. And it's a good public health intervention, I think, and I believe others generally agree, to try to remind the public that this can occur and we ought to have our best coping strategies in place.
So keep an eye out for how the law is applied and for tensions in communities. Is that what you're saying?
Right. The police generally, of course, are aware of this. They observe it quite regularly. So I think they try to make adjustments. But it is the case that persons who meet the criteria for civil commitment, for example, are oftentimes not reported to the police. But when they are reported, the police really don't have an option. They have to bring them in and further the process. So when the economy gets worse, if there are people out there who would meet the criteria but who have not been reported or would not have been reported had the economy been better and the police are now called, they don't have the option to negotiate that. They need to proceed with civil commitment. So there's only so much we can do. So my suggestion is that we don't just deal with the professionals, that is the police and the psychologists and the public health workers, but make the public at large aware of what happens during times like this. I think generally they are through programs like this and other things that you hear in the news these days. But it's important to focus that concern specifically around the issues of intolerance and violence.
All right. Talking about personal responsibility for dealing with what's in our communities. Thank you, Ralph Catalano.
Thank you.
That was Ralph Catalano, a professor at the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley, talking about the health effects of economic insecurity on communities. He talked from the studios of UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism.